Voices of VR podcast. Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing on my series from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is about The Great Escape, which is a part of the competition at Venice Immersive 2025. So this is a piece that is a bit of a comedy, an animation, CGI, VR piece, where you're actually embodying a geranium within the context of this piece. And so you're with other geraniums and you're kind of bored. And so you end up like stealing this phone from your owner. And then you basically post yourself onto like this marketplace for you to be sold to someone else. And so you basically have this trade that happened. And so you basically go on this great adventure as a geranium going into a new home. So you're kind of starting at home, you're using communication technologies and a cell phone to connect to someone else in the neighborhood, and then you're on a massive adventure. For the plant, this is like a big epic adventure, but for a human, it's just kind of like a jaunt around the neighborhood. And then at the end, they essentially kind of end up where they began. And it's kind of like reflecting on, you know, how much actually changed. So the center of gravity of this piece is very much like the emotional presence of the story. You are listening to the story. There's not much actual agency or interactivity. There might be a light interactivity, but nothing that is changing the outcome of the story. The second center of gravity is the sense of embodiment and presence of, like, you know, you're a geranium and you're talking to other geraniums. And then this third quality is this mental and social presence, the communication. You get a sense that you're kind of a part of a community of sorts with these other plants and flowers. It's a single player experience, so there's no other people that are going through it, but you kind of have this kind of virtual co-presence with these other geraniums as you're embodied as this flower. And some of the different themes, or the tension between the boredom of reality and the same daily routine, they long to see the world but are literally rooted in place, the grand adventure and excitement. The geraniums are bored to death and constantly frustrated. Some pretty brave and courageous acts to go on this adventure. Also fears around potential death associated with this adventure. The geraniums are thrilled as they venture outside with Patrick until a chat with the dying bouquet of roses reveals the outside world isn't so kind to plants. So after the brush with death, they end up in the new home and then they, you know, live happily ever after of sorts. But also in the artist statement, he says, it reminds me of the myth of Sisyphus by Albert Camus. Take the boulder of Sisyphus away and he has no purpose in life anymore. And that's exactly what The Great Escape is about. But ultimately that there is beauty to be found in the ordinary spaces of life and the flow of daily existence. So that's the gist of The Great Escape. And that's what we'll be covering on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Joran happened on Monday, September 1st, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hello, I'm Joran van den Broeke. I'm a Belgian animation and VR artist. And I ran into VR while I was studying. I was doing an exchange program in Switzerland, in Luzern, where they had the VR equipment to make VR stuff. I'd never seen it before. And I was interested and started doing it. And I liked it, so I kept doing it. And it's like 7 years ago, and now I'm here with my first VR project at Venice VR. Well, it's not my first, but the first that went through all the funding circuits and that I went pitching at festivals. Like, yeah, my biggest project yet.
And I always like to hear from what kind of design disciplines and things that people are bringing into VR. And so I'm just curious to hear a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
I studied animation, film. I studied in Ghent in Belgium. And like the animation study there is very more artistical approach, not so much the commercial animation you'll find at some other schools in Belgium or Europe, the world. So studying there, I actually was like a kind of also influenced by this artistic approach and this real analog approach, like animating on paper, building stuff. And being a student, I mean, I was a bit radical about it. I was like, technology, fuck that. I'm not doing that. I want to animate on paper and have like the feel, the crisp of everything, the textures. But then it's funny, I saw this VR thing. That was a moment in my study where I was doubting myself, like, oh, cinema, film, is it something for me? Maybe it's not fitting the way myself or something. Yeah, as a student, you often have these crises, I think. I mean, I had them. And then I saw VR, and I thought, oh, wow, this is something new. It's like unestablished. There are no rules. I can do whatever. And that was really what pulled me in there. And funnily enough, it's something really, really technological. A lot of people around me laughed that I was suddenly doing this very technological thing, which made me work on a computer all the time. But yeah, through this process of making VR, I discovered, well, actually, me and computers, we do go together. I do curse a lot still. my housemates will certainly notice. But yeah, in the process of making The Great Escape, the project that's been showing here now, I've discovered it's like the things I make or the things I come up with, it really fits this medium. So it's still always coming from some kind of animation ID. Like the project here, you are a geranium flower, you're a plant, you're stuck in that place. Everything is in this straighted paper texture, like, it has a really analog feel to it, because that's what I try to keep in there. Not make it look too, how do you say this? Not too much 3D Pixar animation-ish. Yeah, so that's like the core, some kind of analog feel that I try to bring with me into VR. Yeah.
Yeah, and comedy as a genre is very difficult to do in any medium, but especially in VR. And so just curious, you know, what led you to do something that was a little bit more comedic?
Yeah. The project stands out because of the comedy. But when I started working on this and started writing the scripts, going to festivals with my producer to pitch it, I wasn't really noticing that it was a funny project. It's just something I wrote and something I liked because of, like, it started more from the idea of these flowers being bored with life and everything being really slow and, like, unexciting for them. And then at some point, after some pitch, we had a one-on-one meeting with someone. Like, I can't remember who, but they told me, like, you forget to tell us the most important thing, that it's funny. and then I was, of course, it's funny indeed. So then we included this in the later pitches. But how I can't really tell. It's like, and everything I make, there's some kind of comedy, I think. Like, I graduated in Ghent with the West Flemish Pub experience. Also, like, hand-drawn on paper and animated on paper. And there you kind of, you're in a bar and you look around you in this West Flemish bar with people speaking this West Flemish dialect, which for Flemish people is already a bit funny because everybody notices you're West Flemish. I am West Flemish. It's part of me as well. And if you say then this stuff, it has a comedic value to it already. And when you sit in this VR bar and you look around and you look a bit too long at one character, he notices and he gets like a bit angry and he's like, what are you looking at? And the longer you look, the more angrier you get. And at the end, you get into trouble and he stands up and punches you in the face. And this is also like a funny thing in any way. So that's what, kind of where it started. Yeah, it's like, it's in me. I like to tell funny stories. I like to make people laugh.
I also really appreciated your artist statement, which I thought really carried the spirit of that comedy as well.
Yeah. Thanks. We had fun making it. For this project, other projects have often a kind of more serious approach to it because it fits their team. But ours is like, it's about flowers. You're a flower. So immediately I thought it would be like really funny if I would be like really serious about these flowers. And then we took it one step further and we interviewed a flower, these geraniums. So it's like also a bit of me having fun and seeing how far I can push stuff. It's also funny that this is now on the Biennale YouTube channel. a guy interviewing flowers.
Great. So, you know, in the video, you say that you were talking to another flower and they weren't very talkative, but geraniums, they just wouldn't stop talking. And so is that how the project came about, or is there another story for how the project came about?
The reference to Sansevierias that I make is actually that I was had this kind of obsession with Sansevierias while studying, and I wanted to make a movie about it, but it never worked out. It's like some obsession of the past now. And this geranium thing, where did it come from? In preparation for this festival, I've thought a lot about it, but I kind of forgot. I know that at one point I drew a flower with a really sad face, and I thought it was a funny picture because A flower is something cheerful. You give it for like special events, for cheerful events like weddings. And then drawing a sad face on it makes it look, it's like a opposition. So I thought it was funny. And it kind of developed out of this idea. I found sketches from like a while ago as well, where I was drawing suicidal flowers because they're like bored of standing there on the windowsill. And then I named them geraniums because these kind of flowers, I don't know how it is outside of Belgium, but in Belgium, this is a really common flower and a lot of old people have them on their windowsills just standing there. And they're like really easy plants, just like Sansevieria, so don't have to water them too much. And geraniums are always have a lot of flowers, so they're always a bit cheerful. Yeah, but they're also just standing there, being bored. So it's really a project that came about me being daydreaming a bit about these plants and then noticing other stuff, putting other stuff together. That's how all my projects come about. Something that lingers in my mind and then connects to something else and then something else and then some puzzle pieces click together and I see a way to present it to the world in some kind of format, which is VR now.
Yeah, it's... I think a striking thing about the piece is that you're actually embodied as a geranium with two other geranium cohorts in the same pot. And then you kind of had this being dissatisfied with the situation and wanting to go on this grand adventure. And so as you were starting to think about this concept and piecing it together, where did you begin with this project in terms of like, did you have a script or did you just go from scene to scene? Did you actually build it out and see what it felt like to be embodied as a geranium and then go from there in terms of how to develop the story? Just curious to hear the process that you went through to build this experience out.
Yeah. So yeah, it started like in 2020, I think, 5 years ago, 4.5, I think. I graduated in 2020 and I had this job as a... I was still doing an internship at the animation studio, but I was and I had this idea somehow of these flowers being bored on the windowsill, and they steal a smartphone of their owner, then put a picture on a Facebook group where people trade plants, and then like that they get out. That's like the core idea that I found funny. I wanted to do something with, and I was talking with like a good friend Eva about how. Yeah, I had this idea for a project and I was not sure if it was like good enough yet to present it to someone. But she was like, yeah, no, Jorin, you got to do this. She's like a big fan of my work and she found it a funny idea as well. And she convinced me. And then the day after I came home from my internship, it was also COVID. Eh? So you didn't see a lot of people or you weren't getting close to people either. So I came home from an internship. And I just typed like one page and I added this drawing of the sad flower that I had still in my sketches. And I sent it to my producers. I sent it to Brecht and Bert, who founded Animal Tank. And told them, yeah, I have this idea for a VR experience and this is what it's about. Yeah, it's like a synopsis of half a page that I actually wrote and this illustration. And then they contacted me back and said, yeah, it looks interesting. Let's talk about it. Let's do it. And then we applied for screenwriting funding in Flanders. So I had to make like a bit of a bigger dossier for it. Then we got this. Then I had like some money to develop the script. And then that's how it grew. I had the script coach, Dagmar Blomhardt, who introduced me to John York's book about the 5-act structure. And then I was like, oh, wow, a story structure. Wow, nice. Because in my study, I never heard anything about it because it's so artistic. We are more focused on expression rather than like technique. So I was like, oh, wow. So anyway, also this project continued developing in me wanting to learn stuff because it's built in Unity. And at the start, my graduation piece was also built in Unity, but I had the help from a friend who's a game designer. And for this, I'm like, all the process long, I was looking for someone who could help me make it in Unity. But I'm also curious to figure it out myself. So I just kept... doing stuff, trying stuff in Unity, and that's also how it grew and grew bigger and bigger. And by the end, I became my own expert, and I like had this demo version with like a peculiar way of putting stuff together. It's also a peculiar way of animation because we had someone from Oysoy, the guys behind Painting VR. They made a puppet tool for me with which I could like control the characters like a puppet. That's how the animation was made. I like grabbed the characters in VR and then based on the dialogue, I moved them. So I became a bit of a puppet player. Then I like got into, puppet theater, what's that like? So it's kind of me being curious and learning stuff for the past 4 years that like resulted in this project. So I learned Unity, I learned script writing, I learned puppet theater, and the idea of the flower, it was more like an anchor for me of it's a funny story and I want to tell something funny but also touching. But at the core idea, because I didn't start out thinking it was funny, it was more like I was fascinated by I'm always fascinated by really slow pieces and slow movies that show time going by. And this is like what I would love. I like to stare outside my window and see all the people passing by and the vehicles passing by and looking outside. And I think this is like a nice experience. And this is like the core from which I wanted to start. I was also inspired by these Naturmords, like stillevens. It's like paintings of like inanimated objects, you know, like flowers. There's like a lot of paintings of just flowers in a vase or like objects laying on the table. This is also like an inspiration, like, yeah, imagine being that flower in that painting, just being a painting. That's what I wrote in my first dossier for the Flemish Fund. So, yeah, it really evolved a lot along the way. Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of the character design of the flowers, I'm wondering if being embodied as a flower, if that influenced how you designed the flowers, because you're seeing it from both the inside out, but also you're seeing what they look like from a third-person perspective. So both the first-person and a third-person perspective you have from the flowers. So I'm just curious around that process of designing these main characters.
Yeah. It also went through a lot of steps. It started also with me just making drawings, then trying stuff out in Unity, what works, how do I attach some part of a 3D model to my head and my arms. Also because, it's not a humanoid, so it's not really a clear answer that you can find online on some YouTube tutorial. But from the start, I knew I wanted these leaves to be in your view and that they like go open at the start. It's like you're blossoming as a character. And then the rest kind of grew from that. So flower doesn't have it doesn't really have much body. It's like just a stem connecting you to the dirt. So And for a large part of the production, we kept also like leaves as hands, because in the beginning, it was going to be interactive and the story would have like parallel narrative arcs based if you interacted or not. So there was like a active version and a passive version. But by the end of production, we like scrapped the whole interaction because it stalled stuff in the story. And for me, the story is the most important. Like, as an animation filmmaker, I'm like concerned with like people having a good experience and getting the story points rather than making the world more immersive through interaction. Because I know it's a popular thing to do. And it's also something I was influenced by because I've seen interactive pieces and I was also fascinated by this. But for me, it became something secondary. So we also left out the leaves as hands at the end. So it's just your stem connecting you to the dirt and this flower leaves around it. Still now, some people are saying the leaves are a bit distracting. So I'm not sure, but we'll keep them in there. I mean, it's finished now. I keep being in this work in progress mode where I can keep changing stuff, but that's how it is now. It's going to remain like that.
That was okay, because you're embodying a flower, so it made me feel like I was more in character.
Yeah, voila, exactly. That's what I also think. If you scrap that, there's like nothing left, right? Yeah.
You're a flower, so what do you want? You
know? Yeah, voila.
That's what a flower would see.
Yeah. And there's also like the nice scene where they open the camera of the smartphone and then you can see yourself as a character. So that's also adds like a small moment of interactivity. And I'm glad it's still in there because it makes it more believable. And the embodiment is like more there, I think. I don't know, was it?
It was always nice to have a kind of a mirror or a way that you can see yourself. For me, it always gets me more embodied as a character when I see myself. So, it's a nice moment. But I was really struck by the integration of the smartphone because you're using it as kind of a literal form of escape, but people often use their phones to escape into other portals of reality. So I don't know if you were making any deeper commentary about our technology today of the use of the cell phone as the portal of escape or the literal method of escape for the plants.
Yeah. Actually, like the inclusion of the smartphone, this is like some kind of story element that grew out of another project that I made as a student. I wanted to tell like some story about a couple who gets separated because the guy is only on his smartphone. Because, yeah, before I went to do VR, I was like, I didn't like technology. I mean, I used a laptop, but I had like a, not a smartphone, but like an old phone with buttons. So I wanted to make some commentary on smartphones. I mean, now I have a smartphone because I need to be on Instagram to promote myself. That's why I bought it eventually after graduating. But yeah, so and this part of the story, I put it in there. So Patrick, the guy who owns the flowers, he at one point he buys a smartphone and then he's like ignoring them. And that's what makes them annoyed. So anyway, yeah, it grew out of another idea of mine, which was to be a commentary on the use of smartphones and people being addicted to phones. So yeah, that's definitely there. That's part of it. But yeah, I have to say, I own a phone now. I'm addicted myself. What do we do about it as well? I don't know. Maybe, yeah, in the end, do they escape the geraniums or not? Not sure. What do you, yeah. I'll leave it open. What do you think?
Well, the next question I was thinking in terms of like, did they really get anywhere? Did they change? And I mean, I think they had an adventure. They went on, you know, they got onto the train and they got to a new context, new place, but they went from being inside to outside. So that seems like a pretty significant change, but more or less they have the same perspective. So yeah, I don't know. It's sort of a commentary on wanting to have a grand adventure. And then it's more of the journey rather than the destination, perhaps?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, from the start, I knew they were going to end up in like just the same spot as where they started from, just a bit different. Because also, like, I like these stories that like end exactly as they begin. Like, one of my favorite movies is like Inside Llewyn Davis, which has like the same beginning and the same end. And it kind of feels, I don't know why it feels so nice to me, but it's more... I should think about it. It's more like, yeah. But yeah, the story about the geraniums, it's more like they don't actually want to escape. It's more inspired by people. I don't know if it's more in Westlanders than other parts of Belgium or the world, but I have the feeling people in Westlanders, they complain a lot. You know, it's this countryside region. People are used to the harsh work of working on the countryside, suffering their existence and like complaining about it. But anyway, like a lot of people are complaining about their life, but they're not taking steps to change it or something. And it grew out of this, like, what if something would change? Like the things they're complaining and wishing for, suddenly they got it. Yeah, I think some people would just panic or not get used to it. So in the end, like for me, the conclusion of the story is people and flowers, they just like to complain because, yeah, I mean, where I come from, I live in Brussels now. You see a lot of stuff in Brussels and the city is like a city of extremes. But if I go back to the place I come from, Poperingen, yeah, I walk there about, it's green. They're like huge houses compared to the ones in Brussels and people have everything there. I mean, not all of them. I mean, it's more, but... Yeah, if I'm at my parents' place, it's this big house, and my parents, they're often complaining about some little thing, or I don't know what. And then I'm thinking, you can give people whatever they want, ever, and I mean, they're always going to find something to complain about. But maybe also depending on the character. But it's also something I think is funny, people complaining. I mean, you also saw it in the behind-the-scenes video that's on the Biennale YouTube channel. It's like... Yeah, people just like to complain, and I'm one of them. I'm always complaining about something. Yeah, ask my girlfriend. She knows I'm always just being a bit too dramatic about stuff. But that's because we just like to complain, and I think we should embrace this as humanity, that we just want to complain about stuff. The internet is full of it. So yeah, there's also a link again to the smartphone. Yeah.
Well, there's a scene where they have like a brush with death, where it's sort of unclear as to whether or not they're going to make it. So I guess if anything, you know, through that journey, they will have had faced their mortality. And at the end, you know, maybe they appreciate, I don't know if it's explicated in that way, that they're more happy to be alive. But, you know, if I was imagining myself on that journey, I think having a brush with death would definitely change my perspective, even though I ended up in the same space. Again, it's that journey of like appreciating still being there because, you know, I didn't know if they were going to make it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of also the joke at the end. Like, they had a brush with death, a near-death experience, and then they, I mean, they change for a while. They start smiling and cheer on Patrick to keep them and bring them to their next destination. But then they're there, and then they're just become their old selves and start complaining. So that's also like the funny or the quirky thing about people. Yeah, which is also something to be cherished, I think. We may change for a while, but then we go, yeah, oh, maybe to, I mean, in some way, in the end, you gotta like accept yourself or something. Yeah, I don't know. I should like try finding a better quote or a sentence to say, right? I have like an the interview, the Meet the Creators panel here later. Ah. I should find something to say that like sticks with people. Oh. Yeah, you have something?
Well, I just had a question. Is there anything that you're trying to escape?
Ah, wow, good question. Wow. Maybe I get this question later as well. What am I trying to escape? Silence, maybe. Well, I have to say, in a way, like, I used to be like a quite, I mean, as a child and as a teenager, I was quite introverted. I didn't say a lot. I was like scared of interaction with people. But then at one point, like, I think my comedic instinct started from me still wanting to connect with people, but also still be introverted. So I started, at some point, I was known as a guy who never said anything until I said like one thing that was like hilarious. And then out of that, I think kind of my character now grew as a person. I'm like a guy making a lot of jokes and making these silly stories. But in a way, it's also coming up with these stories and these jokes. It's also kind of a way of distracting people from getting too close to me, I think. Because, yeah, I mean, I often say this to people, like, yeah, I'm actually a kind of an introvert, but no one ever believes me because I'm always talking and telling all this stuff, and I laugh all the time. But still, I don't know. I like some distance to people, but I don't want to be distant. That's the thing. So I'm kind of making these stories to escape really deep interaction on the spot. I mean, I love to have like a deep connection with people, but it feels vulnerable. So I'm like quite slow in getting there. So I have it with only a select few people that I'm sure I'm like comfortable with. So in a way, I would put it like that, yeah.
Oh, thanks for that, yeah. Well, I sometimes see art that people make as sort of like a dream that they're trying to work through something. So I didn't know if there was a part of an unconscious process that's working through to get you to the other side, but I mean, I think it feels like you're deep into your own artistic process and you're following your intuition. But sometimes there's like a magic puzzle that gets unlocked that you have more answers. Yeah, so that's why I asked. So anyway.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny, this morning I read an article. It was a good quote from some screenwriter who said like, writing a screenplay is more affordable than therapy. But to be sure, I also take therapy. definitely for me. It's actually, it's quite a privilege to be able to make these things and to get funded and to make a living out of this. Because after you finish these projects and you look back on it, you see yourself looking back at you in a way you didn't expect. I've had it at like all the, like with my graduation piece. And actually also now, there was a part where we did the voice actors, recording all the voices, where I had to explain to the actors how to act out the sentences, where often actually the words written in the screenplay, they were meant totally ironic, and often they would play it like they mean it, but I had to say a lot like, no, this is like totally ironic. They don't mean what they're saying. It's like also the characters, the geraniums themselves, they're also remaining distant by being ironic or adding this ironic layer to words they actually are meaning on the inside. So, and this was something I was realizing right there in the sound studio, like, wow, this is a part of me that I'm finding now in my hands, in my script that I wrote myself. So yeah, it's definitely interesting. And yeah, if you walk around here at Venice Immersive and you watch a lot of projects, you'll very quickly find personal traumas and personal stories that people give them a place in these projects, which is nice. And I think a lot of Because yeah, I'm like one of the rare funny projects here. Like,
I think it might be the only one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and that's because it's also someone else said in an interview I read once. Like the first project you make, it's always kind of dealing with some trauma of yourself. And I think it's especially true for VR. It's a new medium, so we have a lot of first-time projects here. So a lot of people going through their traumas, maybe. And so that's why a lot of them are quite heavy. But inevitably, you put yourself in a project and you go into... Yeah, you're sharing... Yeah, you're literally sharing a point of view that you have with someone else, which makes it so powerful. Which is, yeah, something to consider, actually, when you start out on this. Which I didn't at the start. Which makes it more authentic. Mm. Yeah, interesting.
Mm. Awesome. Yeah, well, maybe you've got some things to share even more on the thing today. So, but yeah, I guess as we start to wrap up, I'd love to hear what you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and immersive storytelling might be and what it might be able to enable.
The ultimate... How do you phrase it?
Ultimate potential.
Like the one thing it has to do or can do?
Or, you know, just what it might unlock in the future of humanity or the future of relationship of humans with technology or, you know, where it could take us in the future.
Yeah, so working with VR up to now. Before I studied animation, I studied history. So I have like this reflex of always looking back in history, like history of art up until to now. And like people often start Western art history with like the invention of 3 points perspective. Like Van Eyck in Ghent and the Renaissance artists in Italy. So, and this is like the first step into immersing people into an image, making it with perspective. And it, to me, it developed on and on and on. Like cinema is also a way of doing it. And here you have a lot of experiences that are really just a movie in VR. You're taking the spot of the camera there and you're like immersed. And it's like... I think VR is like the... Yeah, but I feel like one of these corporate people selling VR to their audience now. But yeah, it is like giving you the next step of telling immersive stories. Yeah, and what I said before, it's like you can really put someone in someone else's point of view. I think this is the most ultimate thing you can do with this medium. Yeah.
Awesome. Is there anything else that's left unsaid? Any final thoughts for the broader immersive community?
The immersive community. I'll say hi to them all. Hey. Yeah. Maybe one thing I'd like to add is like, or going on about the ultimate potential, like here everything is like exhibited as a single person experience. But the way I've done some tryouts back in Belgium during the process of making it, and there I always showed it to a group of people. So, yeah, I can share my point of view into some world of me. But it's even nicer if people can also share in the moment this world with each other and share the experience. It's also like the cinematic experience that's like often missing from these VR experiences when you're like just there alone. So yeah, I'd say we should like move to some, to a communal immersive spirits. Yeah, yeah. Let's all go into VR together and visit the same worlds. Follow. Visit mine first, The Great Escape at Venice Immersive or somewhere else in the world. Yeah, you find me.
Yeah, I've seen cinema screenings of some documentaries where it was like pretty much the same of watching it alone in a group. But I think comedy as a genre works particularly well seeing as a group, because you kind of have like a building of an energy and laughter that hear other people laugh that makes you laugh. So it becomes much more of a shared experience. And so, yeah, this would be a great piece to show in a big, large context. So, yeah.
Yeah, often these, I mean, yeah, I've had good experiences being in VR, some single user experience, but it's so important to have like the good on and off boarding for this. Like I've seen the Choice VR in Rotterdam. It's like a really heavy experience about abortion in the United States, where it's not legal everywhere. And the experience this woman had. And yeah, VR, it's like a crazy medium, how deep it can get to you. And it's also kind of a responsibility when you're creating something that you should be like knowing how deeply it will affect your audience. But this documentary did it in an apt way. But the thing is, I put off my VR headset after this, after going through all this. And Yeah, I was there alone in some cottage. And I walked out of this building and I was like totally like, I had nowhere to go with my, with this grief that I felt for, of this woman. So yeah, that's like on and off boarding. That's the key to VR, I think. To like presenting VR in the future in some way that will work. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you again so much for joining me here on the podcast. Really enjoyed The Great Escape and a much needed comic relief of many heavy pieces that are here at Venice Immersive. And yeah, like I said, it's not easy to pull off good comedy within VR, but I think the kind of the surreal, absurdist nature of embodying a geranium flower with different situations and contexts you take us through on this kind of grand adventure. And yeah, really enjoyed it and looking forward to see where you take this all here in the future. So thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Yeah, thanks. Very, very happy to share it with everyone here and the world. And thanks for the interview. Yeah. It was interesting. I came to some new conclusions, I think. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage. And hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep, in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it and allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening. Thank you.